The Carolina Hurricanes get three third-period goals and win game one by a 5-2 score.
Yeah, I mean, we came in and we had a lot of guys that have made cases for themselves to play. And obviously the group tonight didn't get it done. So, you know, we have some guys that are not in the lineup that we know are ready to play and can really contribute. So that's all part of the process. You know, we came into game one. We did some good things, 2-2 tie game going in the third period. We didn't find a way to win it. So now we'll just go right through the evaluation process on the game, on our lineup, evaluate the players tonight and go from there.
And that's exactly what we're going to do. Stillman and Company, delivered by TriStar Moving. We're going to evaluate today as the Predators lose game number one last night to the Carolina Hurricanes. Caroline Fenton is here. Hello, Caroline.
Hello, how are you?
Let's get going. I want to start with this. Last night, I watched like everybody else did. I'm sitting there, and I see the Predators score first, and I start to get a little excited. And that was a beautiful goal from Philip Forsberg. And it was a back-and-forth game. The Canes got a bounce. The first goal was, I don't want to say a lucky bounce, but it was a lucky bounce. And that's going to happen. And the bounces are going to even, and you're going to get some bounces, and they're going to get some bounces. And they got a bounce. Then they had a great goal by Jordan Staal for their second goal. I thought Eric Halla had a nice goal off the Matt Duchene assist. It's 2-2. Now, I didn't like how the Predators played in the second period. If it was a boxing match last night, you would have had the Predators win round one, the Hurricanes decisively win round two, but it's tied 2-2 going to the third period. And that's where I want to start. Because here's the thing about pulling off upsets. We've watched enough NCAA tournament games to know that very rarely is the upset easy. Very rarely when you take down the number one seed is it, oh, we went in there and we were up by 10, 5 minutes into the basketball game, and then all of a sudden we were up by 20 and we won the game by 25. That doesn't normally happen. Normally, just like all sports, it's a game of runs. You go on your run, you go up 1-0. They get their lucky bounce, they get their crowd energized. Now it's 1-1. The Predators did not play well in the second period. I was very disappointed by that after what I thought was a very good first period. But they go into the third period, and I had this approach, and I was hopeful the team would have the same approach, and they did not, which was, it's 2-2. We know Carolina's good. We know they're coming. We know you're going to get their best shot in the third period. The Predators just have to find a way, get one goal, turn it over to Saros, and play great defense. And they couldn't do it. And not only could they not do it, they didn't even come close. They were not competitive in that third period in the Carolina end. And in their own end, they were sloppy. They were lazy. They turned over the puck. They didn't have their head on a swivel. They didn't attack the puck handler. They didn't keep guys out of the slot area in front of Saros. Everything that would be a recipe for disaster for them to lose this game, they did in the third period. They did not play a good third period. With everything on the table last night, they didn't play well. Now, let me say this. Losing game one on the road in a best of seven is not the end of the world, in spite of the fact that stats will tell you over time the Predators are just horrific when it comes to winning a playoff series if they don't win the first game. In fact, they've never have. But in normal terms, losing game one on the road is not the end of the world. You just got to take the second game and steal your game and then protect your home ice, and there you go. It makes no difference. In 2017, the Predators won game one in Chicago. They won game two in Chicago. It's not going to be that easy. But in St. Louis and Anaheim, they won game one. They lost game two. Win game two against Carolina, you just flip the script. It's fine. But the issue, though, is that everything that we were worried about happened last night. In the third period, the Carolina Hurricanes flexed their muscle. They're faster than the Predators. They're more skilled than the Predators. They are bigger than the Predators. They are stronger than the Predators. They out-hit the Predators last night, 56-49, minus 7, something we said absolutely could not happen. They were the better team, and especially in the third period when the going got tough. And I said this about the Titans when they went to Green Bay and they lost against Aaron Rodgers and the Packers on Sunday Night Football. And I came on the air and I said, that's a pretender, not a contender. When I look at the Predators last night, I see a team that is simply just not good enough to compete with the big boys. Because what more can you ask for? Tied 2-2, going to the third period. I thought Saros was fantastic last night, and I thought he had played really well up until that third period. Again, the two goals against him, one was a fluky bounce off of the stick in front of Ryan Ellis, boxed out. It goes, well, Saros couldn't do anything on that one. The second one was an incredible shot, I thought, by Jordan Staal. Saros couldn't do anything on that one. Saros had played well. 2-2. I said this on Twitter last night, and I stand by it. I would have settled for that out of court at any point during the radio show yesterday. If you had called in and you had said, I want it to be 2-2, going to the third period, and Saros is playing well, I would have accepted that at any point last night. But that's when the going got tough. Because, again, you knew Carolina, with that crowd, you knew they were going to play their best game. And the Predators simply couldn't match it. And not only could the Predators not match it, it was some of the guys that we're told are the good players on the Predators that couldn't match it. Ryan Ellis couldn't match it last night. Ryan Johansson, after having what I thought was a pretty strong first period, couldn't match it last night. Roman Josi, -3. Mikhail Granlund, -3. These are supposed to be the good players. These are the guys that they prop up in front of us every year and say, hey, we've got Ryan Ellis, do you? Okay, well, they have Teravainen. They have Aho. They have Niederreiter. They have Jordan Staal. They have Trocheck. They've got good players. They've got a squad. Where are your good players? So the truth is, the Predators have two choices here. And we'll get to the coach in a second because I didn't think he coached a very good game. But the Predators have two choices here. They can either stand up to it and they can play better and they can play like their contracts say they should be able to play, or they're a pretender. And everything that I worried about the entire run in which they turned this thing around will come to fruition, which was you're good enough to beat the Dallas Stars and the Chicago Blackhawks, but are you good enough to do anything else? This season, the Predators were so bad at one point that none of us had any hope, and we felt the only way to get things right was to blow up the roster. Then all of a sudden, they started playing better, and a lot of us who said blow up the roster, make changes, fire people, backed off completely. Same people were calling the show saying, why can't this be 2017? I never went that far. I kept saying all year, I just want to see. I just want to see if these young guys can play. I just want to see if Saros can be a starting goalie. I just want to see if John Hines can coach. And I said, I want to see if these core players are really worth it. And last night, Arvidsson, Ellis, Johansson, Josi, where were they? They didn't play well. With the stakes being the highest and the opportunity being the greatest. So right now, the Nashville Predators are, to me, a pretender until they decide to turn it around and go out. And maybe if they play this way in game two, then we can say, okay, they're a contender. If they can take the first punch from Carolina and they can punch back tomorrow night, then okay, maybe they're a contender. But they've got to play better. Last night's effort was not good enough. Last night, Carolina proved they're a better club. They showed it from top to bottom. The only thing, and we said this coming into the series, but the only thing where the Predators are clearly better, in my opinion, than Carolina is goaltending. Because Nedeljkovic, he gave up all these opportunities and rebounds, and the Predators couldn't do anything about it. Saros makes an excellent save. Puck goes behind the net. Three guys can't clear it. The other two guys are just standing there watching and doing nothing, and they set it up right in front of the net for a goal. There's nothing that your goalie can do about that. So, again, you guys going to be contenders or pretenders? Because I thought all along, when I said sell at the trade deadline, I said this team looks like pretenders. And it felt like, hey, they're better than Dallas. Congratulations, you're fourth place. Do they make a fourth place trophy? I don't think so. So it's time for the Predators, for that group, for this core, for all those guys that for years have had their face plastered on Bridgestone Arena at the top of the most iconic district in the entire city. Those guys have had their pictures on it, and everybody has said, hey, these are our guys. These are the guys we're paying the money to. Well, go do something, because this is your opportunity. John Hines defended the lineup, and we'll get to that. John Hines defended the lineup last night, and even today, kind of just saying over and over again that the guys that are always going to be in the lineup need to play better. And he's right. He's right. It's time for Ellis and Johansson and even Duchesne, who I don't want to pile on because I think a lot of people are getting on Duchesne. I thought Duchesne played okay. But it's time for Ellis and Johansson and Duchesne and Josi and Granlund and Forsberg and all these guys that everybody just keeps propping up. Prop. It's time for them to play like it. It's time for them to, if I could borrow a phrase from myself, pay what they owe. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. What's your reaction? 615-737-1025. The second part of my opening rant, the coach. So I like John Hines. And I've said, John Hines proved this year he can coach. Now, I said he didn't prove he was Scotty Bowman. He didn't prove he can win a cup. But he proved to me that he can coach. We'll get into his lineup decisions and everything else. But I really thought last night I was disappointed with John Hines. And it wasn't so much so the fact that John Hines had a plan and it clearly didn't work. Because it didn't. Again, they wanted to go in there and they wanted to punch Carolina in the mouth. And you knew it right away when Callie Yarncroke, who is not a crusher, turns around and just lights the guy up. The Predators got lucky. I didn't think it was embellishment. Now, Twitter got mad at me. Of course it's embellishment, Jared. No, I didn't think it was. It ended up being two penalties. But when Callie Yarncroke, 20 seconds into the game, is lighting somebody up, that tells you the motive was, go knock everybody out. They got out-hit by 7 by Carolina. It didn't work. The idea of putting Matthew Olivier and Ben Harper on the ice, and you're going to go toe-to-toe with that team, with Sebastian Aho, with Dougie Hamilton, that you're going to go toe-to-toe with that team, I think is a little crazy. And I said on Friday I disagreed with the decision. But I was kind of disappointed that I felt like Hines didn't really have a backup plan last night. Like, that was the plan. We're going to go in there and rough them up. Well, I don't know if you noticed after the first period, Carolina caught on to that. They adjusted. That's what good teams, that's what good coaches do. What was the backup plan last night? Was there a backup plan last night? Depth. And I don't mean depth in your roster, although that is important. Depth in your ability. You walk in with a game plan, you get punched in the mouth, you better have a backup. Carolina did. The Predators and Hines didn't last night, and I didn't like that. And I think Hines did a nice job turning this thing around, but he's going to have to step his game up if he's going to go toe-to-toe with Rod Brendamore. We can criticize the players all we want and say, hey, Josi's got to play at the same level that Tara Vinen and Aho and those guys are playing at. Well, guess what? Hines has got to coach at the same level as Rod Brendamore if he wants to win this series, because Rod Brendamore is a good coach, and again, last night, he showed it. 615-737-1025. We'll get to the calls first, so bring it on. 615-737-1025. Calls and text. Caroline, we'll get your reaction. Ian, we'll get your reaction to game number one last night. Again, I'm not panicking. I am not panicking. Now, again, I picked Carolina to win the series, so I don't know if that's unfair. But I'm not panicking. You lose game one, it happens. You got to win game two. But I told you all yesterday that I thought Predators had a 20% chance to win the series. You lose game one, it doesn't affect it. Now you lose game two, we got a different discussion. But it's not the end of the world to lose game one. But the how, it's got to change. I'm tired of watching Ryan Ellis. I'm tired of watching Ryan Johansson. I'm tired of watching all these guys that every year they tell me how great these guys are and analytics says this guy's good. And I'm tired of watching them get beat in the playoffs. Because if you don't step it up, it'll be the exact same as Arizona. It'll be the exact same as Dallas. And it'll be the exact same as Winnipeg. 615-737-1025. We're live from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. We're delivered by TriStar Moving, Stillman & Company. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Forsberg comes out by the left point. Backhands it down low. Johansson checked by Hamilton. Now the puck to Forsberg coming in front. He scores. Philip Forsberg with the pass from down off the end board. The Predators strike first in this first round game.
There you go. That was the biggest highlight. I mean, they scored. They got up 1-0, and I thought, could it be? Could it be? Could it be last night? And again, as I said, Caroline Fenton, I would have out of court settled for 2-2 going to the third period last night, and Carolina just spanked the Predators in the third period. What was your reaction last night?
I mean, yeah, going into the third period, I thought the Predators were in a really good spot. Mm-hmm. Tie game, they looked pretty good. And yesterday I said that I needed to see the Predators kind of like go back a little bit, but come back big and continue that physicality and continue that fast play through 60 minutes. And that's not what happened. In the third period, they looked entirely too gassed. Carolina was very much so the most dominant team in the third period, and that's ultimately what cost them the game. So the inability to adjust in the middle of the game. Yep. And, you know, I thought, you know, going into the third period, I thought surely the Predators know what they have to do in this third period to take the lead.
Mm-hmm.
The Hurricanes did that. The Predators did not. The Hurricanes stepped their game up in the third period, and the Predators took a step back.
So John Hines last night, and Ian, I'm sorry to put you on the spot here, but John Hines last night consistently kept talking in his post-game press conference about the fact that, hey, it was 2-2 after the second period, especially when he was asked about his lineup and the decisions. And I'll say this, to your point about the adjustments, I thought Brenda Moore loved what John Hines did with his lineup.
You know, I'm sure he did.
This is, John Smoltz said one time on a baseball broadcast, you never want to do something that makes the other team happy. And I do think early on the Predators tried to set the tone. You know, there were some hits. It was a chippy game early on. It was a sloppy, slow, sluggish kind of first period and a half. And then I think the Carolina Hurricanes just realized, we're too fast for these guys. Because when you take out talented players and you put in less talented players that'll muck it up, which is what John Hines did. When you put in Olivier, like, just think about this. Matthew Olivier is an undrafted free agent who is kind of a Milwaukee-ish kind of guy. Same with Tanner Jeannot, those kind of players. Fourth line guys, essentially. Eric Goodbranson is a journeyman, slow, sluggish defenseman that's been traded about 15 times. Ben Harper could not even crack the Predators lineup until literally everybody was hurt. And you're taking out Ellie Tolvin in your first round pick in 2017, and you're taking Dante Fabbro, your first round pick in 2016, out. At one point, the Predators believed so much in Dante Fabbro after a handful of games at the NHL level, including in the playoffs, which they had no problem rushing him in there with no experience, that they traded away PK Subban, one of the most talented players in the history of the team. They traded away PK Subban because they felt comfortable about elevating Fabbro up to a second pair. And John Hines, because he wanted to go in there and he wanted to show it to the Hurricanes, we're going to punch him in the mouth, he took first round pick talents out and replaced them with guys who suck. Like Ben Harper sucks. And at what point, you know, and again, I understood what he was doing because we talked about it, Caroline, did we not on Friday? I opened the show saying I disagree with this decision. I disagreed with it. And I do think Hines can keep pointing to it was 2-2 going to that third period. It was 2-2. Ian, if you got a clip for me of Hines last night, asked about the lineup change. Here's what John Hines said. And this pretty much summed up his entire press conference last night. Take a listen.
So, guys, look, we came in as 2-2 going in the third period, and you have to make lineup decisions. You know, back to Jared's question, you know, we were physical. It was hard. It was a hard-fought game. It's 2-2 going in the third period, and, you know, you look at a couple of goals. They're breakdowns in the goals. You know, one of them's the turnover. They come back in. It's a D-zone coverage goal. So I think when you look at those situations, it's you know, we can talk all about the lineup we want, but we played physical, we played hard. It was a competitive game, and we didn't find a way to win one. So as we've said, we're going to be able to make lineup decisions that we want. But, you know, as we've gone all year long, it hasn't been who's in or who's out. It's how we've played.
So, and here's where I disagree. I mean, I I'm not saying you lost the game because Ellie Tolvanen was out, or I'm not saying that's why you lost the game. I'm just saying that I find it to be ridiculous that, or not ridiculous, I shouldn't say that. I do think that those lineup decisions did hurt their chance of winning, and eventually Carolina figured it out and said, we're just going to skate past these guys. I mean, when Aho went past Ben Harper last night, he never had a prayer of catching up. And that, to me, is kind of the biggest issue here, you know, is that the Predators, it's like guys, just the Predators don't ever take responsibility. The players that don't play well don't take responsibility. And the Hines is sitting here saying, hey, it was 2-2. It was 2-2. And I'm like, dude, like you rolled the dice and you lost.
And the justification that John Hines made for taking Dante Fabbro out and putting Ben Harper and Erica Branson in was, he said, I think Dante Fabbro needs to be quicker. Ben Harper and Erica Branson are quicker than Dante Fabbro? I thought that was just a little bit of a silly justification, because I think we all knew what he was doing there. You're putting in your two beefy guys.
Sure.
And he said on numerous occasions, we're going to be physical, we're going to be tough. And so that just kind of made sense. You put two really big physical guys in. So I just think the justification that Dante Fabbro wasn't quick enough didn't really make sense based on who he put in last night.
What I need Hines to not do, though, is that tone, that two, it was 2-2. It was 2-2 going into the third period.
Doesn't matter what the score was going into the third period.
But see, that tone came off as, it's not my fault. You know, like everyone looks at the coach, and he is right. And he doubled down on it today. I mean, he really talked at length today about the idea that, hey, the players that make the money need to start playing better, and he's right. But again, I look at that as he kept bringing that up 2-2. First of all, the players were awful in the second period. I mean, the second period may have been worse than the third period.
I don't know. Third period is bad.
I think the second period is pretty terrible. I mean, the second period, they didn't even.
Only five shots. Preds only had five shots in the second.
They got outslugged in the second period. The third period, they were tired, and they still stunk it up. But I just felt that there was a lot of, it's not my fault, coming from the coach last night when he kept saying, it was 2-2 after 2. That bothered me. Let's go to your phones. Your reaction, 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Our phone lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Nick is calling from Toronto and is going to kick us off. Thank you for calling. Thank you for waiting. Go ahead, Nick.
Hey, Jared. I agree with you that it was too much of an emphasis on toughness. Olivier didn't need to dress, and one of good Branson or Harper didn't need to dress. Maybe you need one of them for some toughness. I also think that the Predators would be smart to separate Ellis and Josi. They somehow don't work as well together as regular pairing. Benning played really well with Josi during their turnaround, and I'd look at trying that. The other thing I'd like to say is up front, it's not mentioned at all that Jakob Trenin is really good at puck retrieval, and I think he'd be good to use on a power play. They don't have anybody to go and get a puck. That's why they never get control in the offensive zone.
I mean, Nick, I appreciate your call. I'll put anybody in the power play at this point. I mean, the power play sucks.
It sucks. It's so bad.
It's rotten. I mean, this is going back to the Tolvanen thing. And as I said, I told you guys for multiple reasons on Friday how much I disagreed with the idea of benching Tolvanen and Fabbro. That is not, Caroline, back me up on this. That is not that's not a second guess.
No.
That was a first guess, and I said I disagree with it. That power play sucks. And if you're going to beat a team like that, you're going to have to score on the power play. And that power play is, I mean, it's as bad as that 2019 series against Dallas when they went 0 of 15. I mean, that power play is a mess. If you want to put three defensemen on the power play, I'd be okay with anything. And I'm kidding. I would not be okay with that. But like, I'm at that point where it's like, goodness gracious. The breaking up of Josi and Ellis, I agree with, and I agree with it more so than just they play better when they're separated. It's that I don't think Ryan Ellis is all that good. I think Ryan Ellis, when the going gets tough, he gets going. Like, he gets run out in these tough games. He got run out by Dallas. He got run out by Winnipeg. And he's getting run out by the big bodies of Carolina. And the Predators keep trying to sell me, it feels like, on the idea that the little guys can muster up their toughness in the playoffs. And Arvidsson and Ellis, and honestly, those guys never do anything in the playoffs. So why should I get excited about what they could do in the playoffs? So I'd break up that first pair of Josi and Ellis, which I think Hines is going to do because I think he hinted at it. But I would do it just because I want to limit Ellis's ice time and I want to limit the matchups. I don't want him going up against their first or second line. Now, I'm not saying put him on the third pair, but I would separate him. That's just me. 615-737-1025. More of your reaction to game number one. And do we think John Hines screwed up with the lineups? Do you think it? And this is whatever you guys can say can be a total second guess. I don't think I have to back anything up. I was staunchly against taking Tolvanen and Fabro out of the lineup. What do you think? We'll get to that next. 615-737-1025, Stillman and Company. By the way, we will be giving away Kings of Leon tickets later today. I know a lot of people want to go to concerts. Kings of Leon, we got them. So we'll be giving away those tickets later today. And tomorrow, if you're trying to figure out where you want to see the game tomorrow, we will be broadcasting live at the new Party Foul location in Cool Springs, 1914 Galleria Boulevard from 2 to 6, with your chance to win a pair of tickets for Game 4. And what they want is everybody who doesn't know where they're going to watch the game for tomorrow night, they want everybody to come on out to Party Foul in Cool Springs. The brand new location. They want everybody out watching the game, and they will draw a winner They will be drawing a winner tomorrow night during the second period. You must be present to win. But again, if you're trying to figure out where to watch the game, if maybe you were at home watching it by yourself and you're like, I don't want to do this. I want to get about Preds fans. They're going to pack it with gold tomorrow at Party Foul, so be sure to join that. Stillman and Company, we're delivered by TriStar Moving. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Hi, John. All the second-guessing lineup decisions aside, should we expect lineup changes for the next game? Would you anticipate that?
Well, let's see. You know, we got to evaluate the game and evaluate our players and then continue to move forward from here.
There you go. That was John Hines. Last night, John Hines was not having any of the questioning about the lineup. We played the clip in the last segment where he just kept saying, guys, it's 2-2. It was 2-2 after 2. It's not about the lineup. And then today, he doubled down on that a lot, kind of pointing the finger at the guys who are always going to be in the lineup. And I'm not going to name names here, but Forsberg, Johansson, Arvidsson, Duchesne, Granlund, Holla, Cunnan, Janot, Trennan, Sissons. Am I leaving anybody else out? I mean, I just went with the forwards there, so I didn't go with any defensemen. But you get the gist that he's saying it's about them. And I actually agree. Because remember yesterday, I think we were talking about lineups, Caroline. Mm-hmm. And I said to a caller, look, it's not going to be about Matthew Olivier. It's going to be about Saros and Yossi and Forsberg and Johansson and Duchesne. And it is about that. It's about those guys, and it's about Aho and Teravainen and Trocheck and Svechnikov and Stahl and Dougie Hamilton. And that's what this is about. That's what the series is about. That's what every series is about. The Winnipeg series in 2018, it was about Pekka not playing very well and Dustin Byfuglien and Blake Wheeler doing whatever they wanted to for the Jets. That's what it will all come down to. But do you think Hines' lineup decisions last night hurt the team? Do you think, because I think Hines is trying to paint this in his head as kind of a black versus white issue, which is that we were tied 2-2, the lineup was doing fine, and the Johansons didn't play well, and that's why we lost. Don't blame me for the lineup. When I think it's a little bit of both. Like, I don't think that they lost because he put Olivier and Harper and Gudbranson in the lineup. But I don't think it hurt. And I think the line of thinking, which again, I told you all on Friday, I disagree with. I think the line of thinking was very odd. That I'm going to play an incredibly talented team that's big, strong, fast, physical, and really good. And I'm going to take first-round picks off the ice. Dante Fabro, first-round pick, 2016. Ellie Tolvanen, first-round pick, 2017. And I mean, we're talking about talented guys. I don't love Fabro, but he's a talented guy. And I'm going to replace it with Ben Harper and Matthew Olivier? I mean, those are Milwaukee guys. So I'm trying to sit there, and I think it was perfectly illustrated last night when Sebastian Aho burned Ben Harper down the ice. Harper does nothing, like doesn't stop him, impede his way, anything. It reminded me of the Titans playing Kansas City in the AFC Championship game when Patrick Mahomes would run around and Sammy Watkins would burn Tremaine Brock or Logan Ryan or whomever, and Mahomes would just uncork a rocket for a touchdown. And it reminded me of that. But the difference is we knew Tremaine Brock sucked. He was out there because the Titans didn't have any other choice. The Predators had other choices that we all knew. And so did Hines, did the lineup change? I'm not going to say did it affect the game last night. Everything affects the game. But do you think that Hines should be off the hook for last night with the lineup because the other guys didn't play well?
See, I didn't agree with the lineup changes last night. I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, if Elie Tolvanen would have played, or oh, if he wouldn't have broken up the Hurd line, then the Predators would have won. That's not realistic, and that's just kind of wishful thinking and doesn't really do anything for us. I didn't agree with the lineup changes, but the guys who were out there and that were playing that are normally in the lineup didn't do what they were supposed to do. Defensemen were slow. They were sluggish out there. I mean, that second line, zero shots. From that entire second line, Granlund, Yarncroke, Cunnan, zero shots. Those are guys who play almost every single game. Zero shots. So I needed to see more effort on the ice from the guys, like you said, who normally start.
So you put no blame on Hines' shoulders?
I do, but because I didn't agree with it. I don't think that he should have done that, and I'm hoping that if he does decide to put Dante Fabro and Elie Tolvanen out on the ice tonight or in future games,
if he doesn't put them out tomorrow night, now I got problems.
Yes.
I mean, the game one experiment of we're going to go pop them in the mouth, we're going to go take it to them, we're going to be, that was an experiment and it didn't work. You got out hit last night 56-49 minus 7. It didn't work. Now again, did it cost them the game that it didn't work? Probably not. But if those guys aren't back in the lineup tomorrow night, I got problems now. I mean, with Hines, it's like, you know, was it malpractice to take talented guys off and put guys who stink on? I mean, because if I were to ask
you that. He tried something.
But
it's how he responds to it.
It was taking guys who are, I mean, again, Fabro's got his issues. You know, he's good half the time. He's bad half the time. And Tolvanen has not been the same since he got hurt. But it's taking guys who have talent off the ice and replacing them with guys who stink. Harper stinks. And we can sit here and say that it wasn't the lineup. That third goal, Ian, help me out here. What was Harper doing? What was Gudbranson doing? And I will ask too.
They were picking their noses in the middle of the ice. They weren't doing anything.
What was Johansson doing? And, you know, Johansson's probably the bigger story here because he makes $8 million and he's not coming out of the lineup. But I find it hard to believe that you can't attribute that third goal to having that crap pair out there as the third D pair.
I mean, it's hard to say. You know, it was coming off of a rush. Saros made the good first initial save on Trocheck.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Then the puck kind of goes back behind the net. And, you know, at that point, it's kind of a retrieval kind of thing. And they, I mean, let's be honest, the Preds were giving up the slot opportunities pretty left and right. At times last night, and I think that's one area that Carolina is really good at, going to those hard spots. They have some players that are bigger forwards like Staal and Niederreiter who can get to that kind of area, and you know, it's hard to say if they just took their eyes off the puck, or maybe they were puck watching and not watching behind them. There was just some bystanders on that play.
That was awful. And again, I mean, the question here is not, I mean, I don't think we should let John Hines off the, I mean, John Hines rolled the dice and he failed. I mean, he made a calculated gamble, one that I completely disagreed with on the front end. He made that gamble and it didn't work. And so again, I don't think that that's what was the reason that they lost, but I certainly don't think it helped. And so I do, this idea that Hines should be totally guilt-free, I don't sit with. He's not driving the bus to the loss last night. He's on it, though. Like, he's on the list. He's not the list, but he's on it last night because they wanted to try something. This is that, like, 3 a.m. thinking, which is if they had played 2 days ago against the Florida Panthers or the Columbus Blue Jackets or whatever, had a day off and played the playoffs, like the normal season had gone. If that had happened, then they would have not made all of those drastic lineup changes. But this is when you have a week to think about it, and then you convince yourself, you know what? We'll catch him. We'll run a play where Ryan Tannehill goes to wide receiver and Derrick Henry throws the ball down the field. And it's like, no. And that's exactly what I think he did by wanting that grit and physicality, and he wanted it in there. And again, you got out hit by seven. Not a good look. 615-737-1025. I see all your reaction, and we will get to it. 615-737-1025. Plus, A.J. Molesko. Did you watch the Bally Sports broadcast last night?
I watched the NBC broadcast.
The NBC broadcast. A.J. Molesko was... I thought she was pretty sharp with her criticism of the Predators. We'll get to that next. 615-737-1025 is our phone number here on Stillman and Company. Listen to the game every weekday for your chance to win $1,000. It's the game's 1K payday presented by Kentucky Kingdom and Hurricane Bay. Listen for keywords at 9, noon, and 3. When you hear it, go to thegamenashville.com and enter the keyword for a shot at $1,000. Stillman and Company is delivered by TriStar Moving. It's ESPN 1025, the game. Hey, we've got chances for you guys to win tickets at Bridgestone Arena. And by the way, you know what they say about a series? It's never a series until the home team loses. So maybe the Predators can make it a series tomorrow night. But Thursday, we'll be broadcasting live at Social Furniture on Charlotte Avenue from 2 to 6 for a chance to win a pair of tickets to both games 3 and 4. And Friday, Darren, Donick, and Chase will be broadcasting live at Pete and Terry's at Bridgestone Arena from 10 to 2. And you can have a chance to win a pair of tickets to game 4. So last night, I watched the CNBC broadcast. I thought A.J. Molesko was pretty sharp. We're talking about how much John Hines deserves in terms of criticism for Tolvanen and Fabbro, and really how much does it matter. I thought Molesko was really as tough as she's going to get on Hines about leaving Tolvanen out of the lineup, because she brought it up a bunch last night. I think Fabbro not being in the lineup is the bigger story. I think it's the bigger deal. I think it's the bigger mistake. I think Fabbro and Benning should have been in. I don't think that Branson or Harper should have been in.
I agree with that.
And I think that if we're going to hold John Hines accountable for the lineup decisions that he had kind of teased to us he was going to make, I think that's the one that we really have to hammer him on, is the third pair on defense. Because they had me longing for the days of Matt Irwin and Yannick Weber. It was bad out there last night. And I think the thing is like, Harper stinks. I mean, he's slow. He's not good. He stinks. Like, he's never been on the team. He's been in the organization. Ian, how long has he been in the organization for?
Who? What? I'm sorry?
Harper. How long has he been in the organization for? Like, 2 years?
I would say, I think he played in Milwaukee all of last year.
Yeah, it was like a minor league transaction to acquire a depth defenseman from Milwaukee. And then he's on the team, but they're never going to play him, and he's so buried so far down. And then this year it's taxi squad, so it's different, and everybody gets hurt at one time, and now Harper's in there, and he played okay.
Yeah, they were winning some games with him in the lineup.
I think he got his first taste against Columbus, and they were okay. It was when it snowed. They were okay. I mean, he's just not a good player. Like, he's really, truly bad.
He's a big guy, which is helpful, you would think, in this kind of series. But they are not very good at handling the puck. And I do feel like for him being so big, he doesn't always play as physical as you would think he would.
He doesn't play big. And to Caroline's point, he's incredibly slow. And to your point, I mean, once Saros makes that great save on Trochuk last night, somebody's got to clean it up. It's a third pair defense. Chris Mason on the show yesterday said that Saros is going to make the first save. They've got to help him out. They didn't last night. Let's go to your text. 615-737-1025. Caroline Fenton on the text line. What do we have?
Taylor texted in and said, Erik Branson has no business being on the ice. Tolvanen and Fabbro have to be in the lineup. Size versus speed isn't going to work in this matchup. Hines overcoached on this one. I know it's game one, but what a terrible coaching plan.
So I'm going to agree with the texter that he overcoached.
Mm-hmm.
And I think where I'm bothered by it is not only did he overcoach, but he's not taking any responsibility for the overcoaching. You know, when Hines showed up, he talked a lot about accountability. And I have appreciated John Hines, and I do think he's a good coach. But he's talked about accountability a lot. And then last night, when a decision that he made blew up on him, he is not taking any accountability for it. I mean, he very much consistently, even today, kind of deflecting the blame off of the lineup or off of him and making it about the guys that are normally in there.
And it's not all the lineup's fault.
Right. He is right. Like, he is right to say that Johansson has to play better. He's right in saying that Arvidsson has to be something. He's right in looking at that second line. You brought up Granlund, Yarncroke, Cunnan. Where were they last night? He's not wrong about that. But at the same time, there was nothing of, you know, we tried something out. We played a physical game. We're going to take it back to the drawing board. We'll see where we go. Now, the real action as to whether or not you take accountability for it is, what do you do tomorrow night? And I do think Tolvanen's going back in there. Now, what he does on defense, I could see him putting Benning back out there. It's funny because I can't stand Benning, or I couldn't earlier in the season. Why Benning wasn't out there, I just assumed Matt Benning would be out there.
If you want to talk about being a physical team, put Matt Benning out there.
Now, I'm not sure if Benning makes you more physical, but he just doesn't stink as much as the other guys do. So I think that's probably a bigger issue, but yeah. I mean, I just think that there should be a little blame. If there's a blame pie, John deserves a slice. He doesn't deserve the whole thing, but he deserves a slice. What else we got?
One tester texted in and said the lack of a big boy forward hurt this team again. At one point, Mattias Ekholm led in shots on goal against a goalie who looked unsteady at times. When no one is available to at least provide dangerous scoring chances, possibilities of winning big games are slim.
You know, every now and then when we get on David Poile discussions, somebody will tweet in or call in or text in or whatever, and will bring up the fact that in 22 years, the Predators have never had a big boy forward. And it always gets discussed, and it's always surrounding Poile, the fact that for some reason, no matter how hard they try, none of these guys ever become top flight scorers. And I think it's pretty valid. And when it keeps showing up is in the playoffs, when you are playing guys that have them. Like, I was looking at Sebastian Aho. I believe he was drafted in 2015 with like the 26th pick in the draft. Why can't the Predators draft a Sebastian Aho? Why can't they draft that kind of player? Everybody else seems to draft them. Florida's draft, I don't know how everybody got everybody, but Florida's got Barkov. And Tampa Bay's got about 8 of them. And Carolina's got 4 of them. And Dallas has 3 of them. And Columbus has Patrick Laine, who is not a big boy forward yet. Like, why can't the Predators draft these guys? Like, why can't they? Why don't the Predators have any of these guys? I don't know. What's the answer to that? So, it's funny because, you know, the day after game one, they very much could win game two. I think I'd probably be a little surprised if they did. But they could win game two. And they could come back to Bridgestone Arena. And if they win game two, everybody would be ecstatic on this show on Thursday, including me. But I think if they lose the series, and the series goes the way it's playing out right now, I think the anger will turn to Poile, and it will be about the lack of a high-end big boy forward, because they've tried everything. They've tried trading for it. They sent Seth Jones, a legitimate number one defenseman, and a guy that they drafted to be a number one defenseman, a guy that everybody knew when they traded him that he was going to be a number one defenseman. They traded Seth Jones for Ryan Johansson, trying to get a big boy forward. Johansson is very clearly not that. They shipped off PK Subban to clear up the money to be able to sign Matt Duchene, who, I think, what was it, dead last night in time on ice, 5-on-5? Like, holy smokes. So they keep trying this big boy forward thing. You got Arvidsson scoring 30 goals, so everybody gets excited about it. Then they realize he's too small to become a big-time contributor in the playoffs. That's not going to work. So what are you? You're a bunch of role players. And Philip Forsberg, who's a nice first-line winger, but he's not a big boy forward. That's what you are. And so I think that right now, you know, everyone's more focused on Hines and the coaching decision or the guys that didn't play well. But the Poile discussion, if they lose this series the way they lost last night's game, I think it will circle around that forward position in David Poile. And I wonder if the fans are going to let all those mistakes or all those misreads, if they're going to let it off the hook. And I don't know the answer to that. What else in the text line?
One texter texted in and said, our front end is not playoff caliber as a group. Our number one line would be some of the playoff team's third line. No one is really saying it, but our number one line is one of the worst.
I was listening to Robbie and Retro today talk about the Jofa line, and I
Jofa
thought
line
about
good
this.
Last night, I thought.
No, Johansson sucked after the first period, and that line can't really do anything if he doesn't play well. To me, this is it for the Jofa line. Like, this is their last crack at it. Because they were one of the best lines in the NHL for a couple of years, and either they got figured out, or they got hurt, or they got lazy. And I don't know what it is, but the Jofa line has not had any pop. Again, look at their first line last night. That's a group that's got pop. The Jofa line didn't have anything last night outside of that first period where they held their own, which is what you would hope a first line would do. You would probably expect more than holding your own. I get worked up because I think that oftentimes, like, people let that off the hook. That level of talent shouldn't be your first line in a playoff series. Shouldn't. You should have better players. You should have better players. And right now, I mean, again, maybe they'll play better and they'll win the series and, you know, everybody will go back to praising the roster construction and coaching and everything else. But I certainly think when you put them up against the big boys, when you put them up against Blake Wheeler and the Winnipeg Jets, when you put them up against Jamie Benn and Tyler Seguin in Dallas, when you put them up against Aho and Trocheck and Tara Vinen and Nita Ryder and Svechnikov and all those guys, I mean, I think it's pretty obvious. Jordan Staal, I think it's pretty obvious you don't match up in the talent department. I mean, just look at the other game. Look at the other game that was on the same time your game was. The Washington Capitals have Alexander Ovechkin, and the Boston Bruins have Patrice Bergeron, Brad Marchand, and David Pastrnak. You don't have anybody that's in that ballpark. Nobody. And it's not even close. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Speaking of that, there are two guys last night that I thought really let the Predators down. I mean, really. Is it their fault or is it our fault for expecting more? That's next. Stillman and Company, reaction to game one. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game.